Hey folks, how you doing? Welcome back to Lethal Mullet Podcast. It's been a while since we've done a video, and we're definitely going to be doing a lot more of these. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, in the engine room, the kitchen area, I guess. You know, this is the quietest it's been in a while here, so we're going to use this room today to chat. And of course, one of my favorite 1980s movies, and one that you know, when it comes to war films, or at least, you know, the kind where people are going behind enemy lines and trying to, you know, return to a war, or one that's already finished, and, of course, rescue prisoners of war. This is the ultimate film. And without a doubt, it's one of those ones that was a VHS hit that pretty much, if you're growing up at that time, First Blood, Rambo and all that, this is one of those other movies you just got on VHS and you just rocked with it. TL. Uncommon Valor is what we're going to be talking about today. Uncommon Valor, starring Gene Hackman, Patrick Swayze, the list goes on. There's a massive cast in this, and it's a great movie, folks. It is fun. It's a bit of an adventure. There's a bit of a obviously training montage-y sort of sequences all 80s films seems to do back in those days. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. And some more changes which are happening here on the show. And no doubt it is going to be changes which will give you more shows. We'll be back on the bigger network, which we'll talk about in a sec. And, of course, just give you a lot more action movies for you to go and check out and, you know, really enjoy. Another one we're going to be looking at, which we have looked at previously, but I tell you what, folks, it's worth doing a second show on, and that is, of course, The Perfect Weapon, Jeff Speakman's Kenpo masterpiece, and still to this day, probably one of the main reasons I'm still doing karate. Might not be doing Kenpo karate. That could come in the future. But this really, you know, gave me the impetus to keep going like Karate Kid did. So we'll talk about that in the next episode. 222. This is 221 Uncommon Valor. And what a movie, folks. So we'll get into that very soon. But before we get too far into it, let you know where you can find this show and many others like it. Currently, you can still find us on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com. But as of next week, you're going to be finding all the shows now on the FPN Network. That's right. We're moving back to the Fandom Podcast Network, where we're going to be airing the main show on a Tuesday. So it'll be going out, and it has been on there the whole time, folks. But this channel, sadly, will be going, and we're going to be going back to our main channel, which is the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, that's fpnet.podbean.com. Thanks to, of course, our founders over there, Kevin and Kyle. Of course, Kevin, the Raider Nerd, Reitzel, and, of course, Kyle Wagner from the United States. Across the pond there, big hello to those guys, and, of course, the amazing work they're doing over there with his own channel, of course, and the great shows they've got going over there. And we're forever grateful for, you know, them basically giving us a bit of a platform here to chat about action movies and more. And hopefully you, the listener out there, and now the viewer, are getting some real look into some of these great action movies. So lots of news coming up. Obviously, we're going to that format. Stay tuned to this Facebook page. Obviously, on all socials, you can find us at The Lethal Mullet. That's on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, soon to be on Snapchat and TikTok and all those other things. We've kind of had channels on there, but we've just really not done much with them. But as podcasting is moving to more of a visual medium, where you see us now, obviously, we're going to be doing more and more of that. And obviously, showing you, you know, great movies like this you've probably never seen before, particularly ain't seen in Australia in Blu-ray, which we'll talk about in a sec. Just wish we could get the Blu-ray of this bad boy on there too. But nevertheless, we still got the movie. That's the main thing. So we're looking at those sorts of things, also giving you a little bit more when it comes to just reviews here and there by using that shorter wave format of those 30-second reels now that they're doing on, not just on Facebook, but on Instagram's using now, obviously made famous by TikTok as well, which is great too. So it's a great thing for creators to do, and also just spread our love of, you know, this fandom of action films in general and more. Now, for the news. So very quick news segment here. Denis Villeneuve, obviously he's going to be knocking out a massive, huge, as he says it in some of the press conferences recently, massive war film. And of course, that is Dune Part 2. There's a lot of logos out there right now you can go and check out of this. It's been put out on some of the Warner Brothers areas or fandom of Warner Brothers films. And of course, this is really the ending to, of course, the duology or the two films, Dune by Denis Villeneuve. And its first one was very much a, when you think about it, it's a film to open up this universe, particularly to people who aren't familiar with Dune. And, you know, those that have read the book know at the end of the day, the buck stops with the book. You know, Frank made this amazing, wondrous universe, and it's, you know, the gift that keeps on giving. You can read that book and get something out of it every time you read it. I mean, you know, it's about life. It's about families. It's about politics, religion, and just about us, humanity. Even though the setting is what it is, so many 20,000 years into the future, whatever, it's us, just in this bigger universe. Even though it's kind of a feudal society, if you like, by that time. But he's done it in such a way that it really came off quite well. It's a great film. Obviously, those that know it know that some of those characters that you think are gone will be back, particularly if he gets his third film based on Dune Messiah. Yes, you know the characters that will be returning in that one. That's right. The one, those that haven't read the book will least expect, particularly when it gets to that book. Let's just say cloning is a thing. Anyway, but we'll look at that obviously when it comes up to it. Now, it comes to some of the shows on this network. We won't really be spending a lot of time on those sorts of things now. We're back on the main channel. It's basically Little Mullet Podcast coming at you on a Tuesday. So you'll get action movie after action movie to look at, a little bit of Dune news and stuff like that, but we will put that in the news segment as far as that sort of thing too. Really focused more back on the one show now, folks. Occasionally, we'll look at some of the others, but at this stage, we're really aiming towards that and that alone. You can also find us, of course, on Fanthatrax, fanthatrax.com, where I do the Fantha from Down Under. So we'll be going back to, obviously, doing a little bit of that as well on there, so you can catch my love of earlier Star Wars fandom, I will say. That's where my heart lies with that franchise, and it forever will be when it comes down to it. I'm a Star Wars nut, but earlier Star Wars, not the newer stuff. Really doesn't do it for me as far as Star Wars. But the older stuff, there's a magic to it that George really brought to it. You know, he was the storyteller of the time and still is to some degree. And it hurts that fandom really, you know, I think was hard on him, you know, particularly at the time where he's trying to pump out those movies in the 90s and obviously early 2000s. And he distanced himself, I think, with a lot of just the hurt. The came for that too, you know. Then again, you know, he got a chance to make the movies he wanted to make, and he did. So hats off to him for doing what he did anyway. So we look at those upcoming. We were going to be looking at some of the John Wicks. Yes, something that, of course, this channel has already done. That's right, Fandom Podcast Network's done a myriad of looks into the John Wick universe. However, has not looked at it from a martial arts perspective. Because let's face it, the only other martial artist on this channel is Lee Fillingsness. Hello, Lee, my dear pal from the States, my brother from another martial arts mother. So big shout out to Lee, who is a dear pal, somebody I consider a real brother in arms when it comes to, you know, really keeping the Budo spirit, the spirit of the warrior out there. And I know he trains hard. I know he works hard, and particularly putting martial arts to film and stuff like that when it comes to his work in film. So, yeah, hats off to your pal. You're doing good. But, yes, haven't really looked at it from, of course, the martial arts perspective. And as somebody who is a grappler at heart, yours truly, I'll be looking at that. I'll be looking at what, you know, Keanu Reeves did in the film, the other, obviously, martial artists in it. You got Daniel Bernhardt, fantastic martial artist from Europe in that one as well. And, of course, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, judo, it's all in there, folks. And there's some striking arts as well. But the work done, particularly on those films, is fantastic, particularly when it comes down to the fact that the, you know, one of the creators, Chad Stahelski, has been working with Keanu for how long? I mean, since Point Break. Stunt double, you know? That's going to be somebody that's really going to put their two cents in when it comes to what these guys are capable of, and particularly Keanu, who obviously does just as much as Tom Cruise says he does. That's it. Tom Cruise always says he's done all his own stunts, and, well, he's proven it, I guess. But Keanu, I think, is it's not about being humble, I guess. It's the case of, you know, he knows when a stunt is a stunt and when to rein it back and obviously let the stuntman do the work as well. So what can I say? All right, let's get into the main chat here tonight. Looking at, of course, Uncommon Valor. Now, let's look at the 1980s. It was a time where, you know, it was past the time of the Vietnam War, which is ended in the 1970s. There was a bunch of films which came out and really, you know, Apocalypse Now is probably the big one that started it all, obviously. That really was, from Francis Ford Coppola, you know, a Descent into Darkness in that period of the Vietnam War. It was very psychedelic in some ways and vice versa. Then you've got films like, of course, you know, hot on the heels of those through to the 1980s, which really dealt with different parts of the Vietnam War. Platoon, obviously, huge film from an actual veteran, Oliver Stone. And, of course, Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket. Now, I can remember back in the days of high school, I had a night where we basically had a VHS night watching videos from that period. So we watched Apocalypse Now, Full Metal Jacket, and I do believe one called The War Bus or The Bus of War or something like that. And it was literally just some, you know, troop or something like that. You know, it was three or four soldiers stuck on a bus with an M60 on the top, racing around Saigon, taking out bad guys, as far as I remember it. So obviously there's a period where there was heaps of different Vietnam films. You've got obviously two ones that dealt with the aftermath of that. Films like Missing in Action. You've also got, what's another one that's close to that? Well, Missing in Action and First Blood, really, when you think about it, and First Blood Part 2 in particular, really dealt with obviously post-traumatic stress disorder, things like that. If you've read the novel by David Morrell, obviously Rambo's quite a different animal than that one. And it comes down to, you know, how, you know, in the movie, he doesn't really kill anyone. But in the book, well, no, he does exactly what soldiers be trained to do. And basically fights a guerrilla war against the town and, of course, the sheriff and all that sort of stuff too. So it's an interesting, you know, book in itself. It's one of my favorite books, actually, First Blood. But having said that, they made a franchise out of it, so they had to change the direction of the ending of the book in the film. And obviously Sylvester Stallone took it in the direction they did with, of course, Ted Kotcheff, which is the director of this film as well. So obviously First Blood came out, but in 1983, Uncommon Valor was on the plate of many a moviegoer. This is a great film, and just to give you a bit of an idea of what it's about, we'll read some of this blurb here too. Now, of course, Gene Hackman is the lead in this one. He plays Colonel Jason Rhodes, and without getting too much into it just this early, he basically has a son who is a POW, who's left behind in Vietnam, and so many years later, he's spent all of his time trying to find his son that is still in Vietnam as a prisoner. Presumed still alive, MIA, missing in action. Send in Chuck Norris. But no, this is a little bit more realistic, and it definitely is something that's a bit more of an adventure film, as well as, you know, there's a little bit of comedy in there too. There's camaraderie of brothers in arms, you know, like I think this one particular, you know, it's a real men on a mission film. Different age groups, veterans, and even Patrick Swayze playing a young soldier in this one, one that's left the military and basically fallen out with, I think he's commanding officer or something like that too. So, but this is great. This is a Blu-ray which just came out to JB Hi-Fi stores a couple of years ago. It might have been like 2020 or 2019. And this had not been available in Australia in Blu-ray. So again, one of those ones that's a little bit hard to find. So if you can see that there, it's beautiful artwork on the front of it too. And this is Region B. So if you've got a region-free Blu-ray player, which you can get in Australia, not sure that this one would need to be because this is our region, and it's from Umbrella Entertainment, which do a fantastic job with a lot of these 1980s action classics. So it's starring Fred Ward, Reb Brown, Randall Tex, Cobb, folks, Patrick Swayze, Harold Sylvester, Tim Thomason, and Robert Stack. As well, yes, Unsolved Mysteries. Yeah, remember that one? Unsolved Mysteries. With, of course, Robert Stack. And he's a bit of an untouchable. No, not the Sean Curry one. Untouchable-ish. Don't touch your bulge. Ish. Yeah. Cut your badge. Cut your gun. No, not that guy. It's completely different. But this film in particular is one of my favorites is because it's rewatchable. Yeah. A lot of those films, once you know the twists and stuff, not as rewatchable. But the cast make this rewatchable. So we'll get into some of that and the facts now. I saw this film probably around about, I think, late 80s it was, when it was on TV. It was the first time I saw it. Then when I went to the video shop, I could see in a very faded copy with a VHS jacket all torn apart. And I'm like, hang on, this looks all right. What's this? And when I saw Gene Hackman in there, now Gene Hackman at the time, you know, it was somebody I've been watching a lot of work of, obviously from Superman, where he played, of course, Lex Luthor. And then as the films went on, some very serious films. And there was also films like, and particularly at the time, that really got the imagination running when it comes to more serious war films like Bat 21, which is basically about a downed pilot in Vietnam, Lieutenant Colonel Isiel Hambleton, is again a true story, this one. And so that really caught my attention. A great cast, had Danny Glover in it as well as Bird Dog. Great film. But this one, done a little bit earlier, similar sort of principle about, you know, people that are basically behind enemy lines and trying to save their pals. Directed by, of course, Ted Kotcheff. Screenplay was by Joe Gaten. And story by Wings Hauser. Now, that name sounds familiar. Wings Hauser. Wings Hauser is the father of Cole Hauser. Now, if you remember Cole Hauser, he was from, of course, Pitch Black, and of course played the antagonist against, of course, Richard B. Riddick himself, Vin Diesel, a man of many talents. But he does that role well. I'll give him that. It's definitely a lot better than the Fast and Furious franchise. Richard B. Riddick. Great character. So with that too, of course, we've produced by John Milius, and it was also cinematography by Stephen H. Burham. Music was by, of course, the late great James Horner. Yeah, great score in this. Very military style operatic, if you like. It really fits that sort of feel. It was put out and distributed by Paramount Pictures and came out December 16, 1983. So it was a basically a Christmas movie, folks. So the budget was about $11 million and it made $30. Here you go, $30 at the box office. So that's a success. It's a movie that did really well at the time. Obviously made almost three times as much money as, you know, the others. But it is one that really delivered a fun, entertaining film, even though it's, you know, at the time, very, very paramount thing out there, which is, you know, are there prisoners of war still out there? So it was something that, you know, it was in, you know, I think you'd see it occasionally, people coming up wondering whether there were still people out there that were being held behind enemy lines. And, so it was definitely something that was you know, out there in terms of particularly the, the market at the time, of films. It was just a good thing to have as a backdrop to an action film, I guess, but serious subject matter. So in 1972, a group of soldiers are in Vietnam in the heat of battle. And from here we have a helicopter coming in to land in the rice paddy area where they're trying to get all the troops back onto the helicopter and get away. And when it comes down to this, a couple of them get left behind. And from here, they're carrying the guys on the chopper and they take off, even though, of course, they know they've left men behind. We jump forward a few years into the early 1980s and we meet Jason Rhodes, who's a retired Marine officer. He's a colonel and he's looking for his son, Frank. And we get to see this scene at the start where he's all over different parts of Southeast Asia looking for his son. So he's got different contacts in the military and in and around there too, where he thinks he's in Laos being held prisoner of war. So from here we get to see him also going through to the US government asking for help And of course, particularly when it comes to looking for the Vietnam veterans and stuff like that that could be out there, or those that are still prisoners of the war. And of course, here is where he realizes he needs to get a team together to actually go out there himself and, of course, find his seat on Frank. So what he does is he goes around the US looking for, of course, the men that were part of Frank's team. So from here, we get to see all different types of soldiers and stuff like that that will help with, of course, what he's doing too. So part of Frank's platoon, we had the demolitions expert called Blaster, who's played by Red Brown. Blaster's fantastic. Again, very comedic character, but still very serious character at the same time. But in this film, really, I think, fits that sort of humorous tone that you need in this. Crazy but humorous. There's also Wilkes, who's really the one that suffers the most from PTSD in this storyline. And, of course, played by the amazing Fred Ward, of course, which we know from an amazing action series, of course. One that we've talked about many a time on here, and of course the books. And of course, we're talking about a book series called Destroyer. Yes, that's right. and of course, he's great. And of course, he went on to do Tremors and many other great films. Fred Ward's one of my all-time favorite actors and a great character actor. But of course, he is the tunnel rat in the team. And of course, Randall takes Cobb in this one, which they find in jail. Plays the gun, a guy called Sailor, who's a gunner. So he was the machine gunner of the group. And, of course, he's got a really interesting character, of course, not too far removed from, I think the real Randall Tex Cobb's personality himself. But he really gets into that sort of crazy, living on the edge sort of personality that Sailor has in this too. There's also two helicopter pilots that are in this as well, Johnson and of course, Charles, too, who join as well. And, of course, Tim Thomason from Future Cop or Transes is playing one of those as well, too. Also, Kevin Scott, who's played by, of course, Patrick Swayze, basically plays a former recon Marine in this. And he is also one of the son of somebody that's MIA in this, too. Now, behind all this is Robert Stack, who basically plays a businessman who has a heap of money to financially back this whole operation. And what he wants to do is, of course, find his own son, who's also MIA behind enemy lines too. So they put together in Galveston, Texas, this huge training area where they can go through all these sequences. And this is really the heart of the film. I don't think the end action sequence is, anything to top it, because it's the building of the team and it's the great interactions between the actors. I mean, they obviously had a bit of fun doing this. And even some of the time they do in Bangkok afterwards is quite interesting as well. But what's fun about this one is that we get to see them all play off each other, play off obviously Patrick Swayze's inexperienced youth as well in this, and you just get an interesting action film. This is really something that, I think a lot of those others don't have, because they've got Sylvester Stallone as the action lead or Chuck Norris, and you're really watching it for the action in that, not so much the acting or the comedy, which you're just not going to get in those, You might get some one-liners, but that's about it. And that's why I think this one has it over the top of even films like First Blood in terms of bit of a better time, I think, in the cinemas. So as they get to Asia, obviously, there's a bunch of contacts that they come into the middle of, and basically they get noticed by the CIA, and all of their stuff gets confiscated, all their weapons, all the training stuff that they need out there too. From here, they go to, of course, the streets, and they find basically a bar where somebody's selling World War II surplus materials. So instead of using all the modern stuff of the time, the 1980s, they get outkitted with Tommy guns, BARs, Garands as well, Grand Rifles, and basically it's everything from World War II, which, again, still pretty cool. Maybe some of those better choices than what they would have had in the 80s anyway. So, of course, from here, they go past the Laotian border, and, of course, they force against the border patrol there, and some of their people that meet them on the ground get killed. And from there, of course, they've got to go to the camp itself. From there, it's basically getting ready to get a night attack, early morning attack on the base. The choppers come through. Basically, everything goes just as they expect, but, of course, chaos presumes. And from here, we get to see the rescue of the POWs. They do find McGregor's son, but of course, Jason Rhodes, who's going through every single little hatch and hutch that he can find people in, doesn't find his son. And eventually get to a point where they have to leave. There's too much enemy fire. They jump on the choppers. But, of course, McGregor then tells Rhodes that, of course, his son had died due to disease. From there, we get to see an end scene, which is, you know, pretty quick, but it's basically all the families and everything coming together. And if anything, it's a bit of closure for, of course, Jason Rhodes. All right, let's look at the cast. Obviously, Gene Hackman was riding very high in the 80s at the time, and this is one of his better roles as Rhodes. You know, you can really see emotion of the character, really get a feel of obviously what he's going through. And I think, too, you know, it's his own military experience. He was in the military, too, that he brings that to, you know, the fore. Does really well with it. Fred Ward plays Wilkes in this. And of course, we've talked about Fred Ward before. Just a really, really fantastic actor. You know, somebody that really delivers, you know, everything that he did back in the day. I think what's great about, in particular, you know, Fred's work is there's a real grittiness to it. You know, he's somebody that really brought everything to the core. But I think what the great thing is, it's all different. You know, he's a character actor that knew that he couldn't just play the same sort of style. And that's what he brings into it too. I mean, you look at Tremors and he's having fun, even though it's a pretty, you know, full-on performance as well. Reb Brown, really good in this. I think Reb Brown is the heart and soul of this team. It goes out, you know, there's the fun, fear, the anxiety, but also just the exuberance of what it's like to be in the heat of battle is seen in his performance. Randall Tex Cobb, which I've always loved, you know, his work, particularly in this, but also Ace Ventura, you know, Blind Fury, particularly very funny in Blind Fury. Always played a good bad guy, but of course he's real boxer and kickboxer as well. So hats off to somebody that's, you know, a real martial artist out there too. Patrick Swayze, obviously this was early on in his career, heading towards classics like Roadhouse and Dirty Dancing, I guess, but definitely Roadhouse. yeah, he's really good in this. You know, again, he plays the young callow youth who, you know, trying to figure everything out for himself. And I think he does pretty damn well for what he's doing in this. It works. And I think playing off the others, he really gets that feel of what it's like to be with an experienced team. And yeah, it's pretty good. Then we've got, of course, Harold Sylvester as Johnson, does a fantastic job. Robert Stack as McGregor. And, you know, it's just Robert Stack, folks. Good. But again, you know, he doesn't have all that much time. Again, just a, you know, somebody with a bit of money trying to help out the team in this. Now, in this film, if you blink, you'll miss it. You'll see Michael Dudikoff as Blaster's assistant at the start. So you do see him early on. And there's a couple of other little notable appearances as well. So the film began with, of course, a screenplay by Wings Hauser. He said basically he was inspired by a friend of his who'd been to Vietnam. And he saw that they'd left something behind in there in Vietnam and triggered the idea in his mind. And, of course, I think that's the thing is at the time it was, you know, only so many years after you know, the countries have all pulled out, not just obviously the US, but New Zealand and Australia as well, and some others. So there's always that you know, in the back of their mind, obviously they're leaving not just obviously equipment and stuff like that, but potentially people that were there as well behind. So Hauser took 18 months to put the script together, gave it to Paramount, and had gone through many different changes of titles and stuff. One was Last River to Cross. There you go. Found it too. But of course, one of the great people behind this was John Milius. Now, anyone that knows John Milius, obviously he loves these sorts of films. Yeah, the creator of course one of the greater films, the adaptation of Conan the Barbarian with Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is, you know, for a fantasy film, a dark fantasy film, it's very gritty as well. So I've always liked his sort of take on it too. And I think that's what's interesting about it. So having him anywhere near that sort of military stuff, I think that's what's, you know, he's a very tough, you know, guy when it comes to his idea of story. But of course, film as well, the gritty. Now, the grittiness is the thing, the key to it too. So from there, too, there's a couple other changes too. And of course, from there, Ted Kotcheff got involved in January of 83 as well. So I think what's interesting too is that there is that idea too that with, you know, using a team in this film as well, it just makes it more realistic. And that's what I think, you know, for me, drove me to watch this more than a lot of those others, which were just one action guy doing it as well too. And, you know, the idea is that this is more like, if you like, a more realistic version of the A-Team in some ways. But, again, filming started in June 6th of 1983 at the campsite, and basically a camp that forms the climax of the movie. It was built on a private ranch in Limahai Valley in Hawaii and filmed until early 1983, August. The opening scene was shot a distance away in a rice paddy near Hawaii as well, and 200 yards away, Keio Highway down there is too. Additional parts were shot in Salt Lake City, Utah, Sun Valley, California, and, of course, Castaic, California as well, which was where the training camp was as well. So there's obviously a bunch of choppers they had to bring into the movie as well. Again, the Hueys in this, you know, would have been not too far removed from those that were used in the, obviously, the was it the war itself too. They had obviously Bell UH-1s and the 26B Jet Rangers as well. Of course, which is interesting. You know, they are military-grade ones at the time, if I remember right anyway too. So, of course, we've got in this one, particularly some great work when it comes to music in this too, which was just fantastic by James Horner. Fantastic. So marketing in this one was interesting too. You know, it's interesting that it's a film which, you know, on the video cassettes anyway, it looks, you know, if I remember right, they didn't even have, this was not the cover of the that I saw on the VHS anyway. It was just a bit more plain. So really didn't know what to see in the movie. Again, it's like when you watch any of those big action movies of the 90s. It was usually the action star with one huge freaking gun. And that was what sold it, you know. It was one of those huge things. But I think a lot of the posters later on VHS got back to, you know, more of a feeling of what it was. And that's the difference, you know, where there was a lot of video walls that used the same principle, and it was just different. So for as far as a common value, I always thought that was a great thing too. So how does this stack up against other Vietnam films? Well, folks, it's not really a Vietnam War film. It's something post-Vietnam. You know, it's something that, you know, is definitely more in the wake of it. And it being like Missing in Action, of course, First Blood, Part 2 in particular, you know, I think it's a cut above those because of the camaraderie of the cast, the more humor involved in it too. And when it went to the violence, it was a bit more real. This film gets a 4.5 out of 5 on, of course, the Legal Mullet podcast. Well, that does it for today's episode, and we'll catch you next time here on, of course, this here Facebook page. But also check us out on, of course, fbnet.podbean.com moving forward, and we'll catch you out there. And, of course, Action Movie Cinema.